Programming is sponsored by Don Beischel. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And a Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Don Beischel, Jr., here joined today with my co-host, Joanne Suppressi, and the host of the Don't Back Down show, Stan Casaccio. And this portion of the show is brought to you by Salvatore's Cucina, 1150 Bristol Oxford Valley Road, Levittown, PA. And it's a BYBO establishment with classical Italian food. And his number is 215-547-7000. And Joanne and I eat there quite a bit. So
You're making me hungry just by mentioning Salvatore's.
How are their nookies?
When we went there with Doug and Revy had those. So, Doug, you're on the line before we get to this.
I used to help my mother make them in my house. So I'm always looking. I always try to sample them. I have to go there just to try it, especially if Doug and Revy liked it.
Go ahead, Doug, why don't you tell Stan how they were?
It was delicious. They melt in your mouth.
Oh my God. I mean, I think you had some familiarity with that type of pasta in your background.
Yeah, kind of wonder.
Well, I grew up with those, like, soft, hard gnocchis.
Yeah.
And so I never really liked them until I went to a place in Margate called Saltwater, and they had them, and they were the types that melt in your mouth. Now like Stan, I want to try them like everywhere I go.
Let's go out together to the restaurant and we'll party our faces off.
All right. And we'll take pictures and we'll show everybody.
And we'll take pictures and everything. Okay. We're on.
Okay.
But now for the serious stuff.
Yes. So first, before we begin with Senator Mastriano, like we do every week, I want to wish everybody out there a happy Father's Day. You know, it's a pretty great thing. Things have changed over the years, basically. I remember growing up with my dad, we did a big celebration with Father's Day, but my dad was never one of the ones to say, oh, you know, I love you. And all. My dad wasn't the huggy-feely type of thing.
Well, you came out different.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I made it my mission that I was going to be different with my kids, and I've done that. That was the generation, you know, they worked and they provided for their family, and that was their way of saying I love you. So
my dad's way of saying I love you, I think, was, you know, bending us over and giving us the paddle when we were back.
Well, I had a few of those. You know, I'll tell a quick story before we bring the senator in. In our house, the neighbor next door, they had a willow tree. And when my dad really wanted to get us, he would actually make me walk over there to cut my own switch so he could whack my butt with the switch.
Oh, my God.
Wow. That's a little tougher than my experience.
It's like you had to think about it as you were walking over to get it.
You're like, all right, which one won't hurt me the least?
Exactly.
You know,
which one's going to break the fastest?
Yes.
So, Senator, welcome to the show. Obviously, there's a lot going on besides the fact that you're going to be the next governor of Pennsylvania.
Yes.
One of the big things, and obviously, let's talk a little national stuff first. The inflation rate in the country is just destroying people. And here in Pennsylvania, we're seeing it happening. Just a little background. I mean, we're at right now. When President Trump left office, inflation was 1.2%. When Joe Biden took office, and at the end of 2021, it was at 4.7% and 7% in December. The average so far in 2022 is 8.16%. It hasn't been that high in this country since the Jimmy Carter days. So, Senator, you got the floor.
Well, you know, and according to Penn Live, and I disagree with their numbers, but just we'll put it out there. They say that it's going to cost us $3,000 more a year to maintain the same standard of living because of inflation and energy costs this year. I've seen other statistics say around $4,000. So for most American families live paycheck to And this is hurting so many people. It's emptying out the savings. A national report said most savings are, you know, are at the lowest level than they have been in many years. All of us, except maybe Joanne, remember the Jimmy Carter days and how rough life was.
True.
That's good. You remember Jimmy Carter. That's when Reagan came in, and it was a landslide. And so, yes, my opponent is you know, has millions of dollars to throw around and all these ads and all that. But I think his attack pieces will go away as people go to the gas pumps or buying groceries or seeing empty shelves or can't get baby formula. You know, in the end, that's what talks.
Well, one of the things that you're a big proponent of, which I think would help our overall situation, is increasing energy production here in the state of Pennsylvania. And, you know, and of course, your opponent and his buddy, King Thomas Wolfe the First. They did everything they possibly could to shut down energy production in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so, you know, and the purpose of course, is opening up these wells and you know, making it easier to permit fracking and to roll back regulations and to expedite the process of permitting is it will drive down prices and everybody will benefit in some capacity then. You know, I know we don't produce gasoline or what have you, but we, of course, energy in the form of coal and natural gas. And we're literally on a gold mine here in Pennsylvania, and it's just not being developed. And for 8 years, Tom Wolf has gone above and beyond the call of duty and trying to restrain these forces because he's beholden to these radical left groups that want people 100% off of fossil fuels. And, you know, Joe Biden told us that, you know, if you remember during the campaign, even when he was on CNN during that one, you know, debate. And I hate those debates when, of course, we saw Donald Trump have to take on the moderators as well as the, you know, other candidate, which continuously sucks.
Yeah.
Biden said he's going to stop energy production and he's going to go for green energy. And so this is no mistake. You know, we should not be suffering this way right now. It's by design.
Well, one of the things that this is interesting. I'm just going to throw this out there. So I get an email this morning from one of the places I play golf at, Ravensclaw in Montgomery County. And they said, due to the rising costs of gasoline and other items, we're going to have to start putting a $2 surcharge on every round of golf to pay for the extra cost involved. Now, you know, if you're a golfer, and golf is expensive enough to play, and now they're going to toss an extra $2 on there for some kind of surcharge for gasoline and all that. But see, what people don't realize, and I think you hit the nail on the head, when you have these rising gasoline prices and stuff like that, it has a ripple down effect, and it causes everybody's prices to go up. I was telling my wife the other day, I said, one of the things people don't notice, last year when President Trump was in office, a loaf of Stroman bread was $2.29. Now it's up to $3.49 a loaf.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say, you know, talking about how Biden's going to go over to see Saudi Arabia, maybe you should join LVI golf tournament. You don't have to worry about it. They'll pay for you.
They won't pay for me. They'll pay me not to come.
Actually,
you'll be able to afford your golf then.
Actually, they did offer me a I turned them down.
Oh,
I just want to let everybody know that.
Well, I was just going to say, I love grocery shopping. It's like one of my favorite days of the week. Actually, I go a few times a week.
Okay.
I love it, but not lately.
Not lately.
You know, it's like I buy, you know, my big tub of organic lettuce. It usually costs me $5. Now it's $6.99 just in the last, you know, 2 weeks. I've seen that price go up. And, you know, the prices like that are everywhere. You know, I buy my bag of organic apples, it's like a 3-pound bag. It used to be like $4.29. Now it's $6 and odd cents.
Well,
you know,
this is
a lot of money.
Well, this is the disconnect. And, Senator, I'm going to ask you a comment on this. This is the disconnect between people like Josh Shapiro who want to talk about social issues and somebody like you that is concerned about the people and the what I call the kitchen table issues.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, I was at an event yesterday in Mechanicsburg called Jubilee Day. And everybody that came up to the table, everyone that came up to the senator's table, the first question they asked was, you know, what's his plan to help us mm-hmm. out? I mean, that was what they were asking.
Yeah.
Nobody was asking about green energy or
social issues,
social issues or BLM or insurrection. They just wanted to know what the senator's plan was to help out the citizens of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and one of my biggest concerns is senior citizens and those who are retired.
And that came up as well.
Yeah, that's a really big issue. It's been on the table for years, but now it's more drastic and it's more concerning. And I just met a couple, and the wife has dementia, so the husband's taking care of her, but he's so lost right now. He doesn't know how he's going to afford, you know, the bills in like maybe 6 months, because he is depleting his savings that, you know, he has saved
his whole entire life. And Doug, as senator, can speak to this, but Biden's got that figured out. We're going to raise taxes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I just want to say, you probably heard his speech in front of the union people in Philadelphia, and it was just an unbelievable speech. And it kind of reminded me of the joke about the Democratic and Josh is kind of the same way. It kind of reminded me of the joke about the Democratic politician visits a remote little town in Appalachia and asks the mayor and the inhabitants what the Democratic Party could do for them. And the mayor says, well, we have two big needs. First, we have a hospital but no doctors. So right away, the Democrat whips out his cell phone, speaks to somebody for a while, and then he says to the mayor, well, we got it all sorted out. You're going to have doctors tomorrow. And then the Democrats ask the mayor, what was the other big need? And he says, well, because of all these mountains, we have no cell phone reception. So basically, Josh Shapiro and the Democrats really have no cell phone reception at all.
So, Senator, I know you have a pretty comprehensive plan on what you can do to help the citizens of Pennsylvania. So why don't we touch on that a little bit? Because I think that's the thing that's in the forefront of everybody's mind right now.
You know, so we have to move, you know, with rapidity. People are in need, and there's no time for dithering. So I'm going to move, obviously, on day one with decisive action here to make life easier and drive prices down and, have a state where people can afford to live in. Because right now we can't afford it. And as Joanne rightly said, especially the elderly, anyone on a fixed income, single parents, you know, just go down the list here. Everybody's hit hard. It's really hard out there to live. And so on day one, we're going to be, let's talk about energy first. On day one, we're going to be out of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, and that's the climate accord that's between the 12 states now, mostly, you know, New England and Mid-Atlantic, where you have to pay for CO2 emissions. So it's a mini Paris climate accord. And we estimate on the Republican side in the Senate that it's going to be a $2 billion cost on the taxpayers, on people who use energy, that's everybody, over the next 2 years. So on day one, next January, we're going to be out of that, because Tom Wolf did not use the General Assembly to get us into it. He did it by fiat, you know, by edict. So that's going to be done. So you should see it in the middle of winter then, next year, you'll see your energy bills going down because of that. And then part two will take a bit more time for it to catch up with us there, but it's rolling back the regulations that Tom Wolf has put on our energy sector and to make it business friendly, where these companies will want to stay in Pennsylvania and not leave to Ohio or West Virginia or Texas. And I know this year, as much as we had this huge need here, and prices are up because of supply, you know, it's a demand and supply kind of thing, that we actually have a plant in the Southwest, a major power plant, closing up this year and another one next year. And I'm asking them to hold on there and just wait till I get there, because we need them to stay open. And we're talking about tens of thousands of high-paying jobs as well.
Right.
And So as far as reducing the burden of permitting, because, you know, the Department of Environmental Protection, DEP, they've made it really hard to expand because they have the administration against energy production. We literally have centuries of energy underneath our feet. This is no exaggeration. Geologists say it's, you know, several hundred years worth of energy right now that we can use. So let's use it and let's make life cheaper and easier for people to live, because when energy prices go down for everything.
And one of the things that I think that is important for people to realize is already there are a lot of, like, for example, in my area, Waste Management, the trash company, they use natural gas to power their trucks. I know UPS does the same thing. So if we're able to increase natural gas production here in Pennsylvania, we'll be able to drive those costs down for those businesses alone, which would, of course, relieve some of the burden on the taxpayer and the general public.
And it's as simple as that. This isn't that hard.
Right.
And so we need someone who's going to lead, you know, decisively and not be in the pocket of special interests as my opponent is. And so if you want to have life, you know, cheaper, regulations rolled back, my goal is the first 100 days to get us underneath 100,000 regulations. Right now we're at 153,000 state regulations. And that affects everything you do, whether you have a business or not. That's killing you. And so when we strip away the power of the state government in these regards, it drives prices down, it reduces the burden, and makes Pennsylvania open for business.
Right.
Yeah, the thing about these regulations, a lot of them are proposed by people that aren't elected, and the legislature does no reviews or has open discussions on any regulations that are passed. And I really believe that one of the things that the state legislation should do is any regulation should have an open day of the public asking questions about it. It needs to have the light of day shown on some of these regulations because they're proposed by people that are not elected and have their own political or their own crazy ideology to drive home.
Right.
It's a big problem.
Well, one of the other things, Senator, and I know you we've talked about this before, but it came up a lot yesterday because we had a lot of senior citizens there. And one of the issues they were talking about was the property tax situation. And I know you have a two-pronged plan of attack on this. Can you discuss that a little bit as well?
Yeah, and you know, property tax is in effect paying rent to the government to Harrisburg for your property and house, which means you never really own it. And from our research on this legislation here, it's estimated about 10,000 homes a year in Pennsylvania are lost due to failure to keep up with property taxes. And the overwhelming majority of those people losing their homes are the elderly. They're on fixed incomes, retirement pay. You know, in this environment here, that sadly, that figure is going to spike. And how it works is after 2 years of neglect of not paying your property taxes, the sheriff comes in and kicks you out, and your house is sold, you know, at an auction for pennies on the dollar. And that this is happening in Pennsylvania and has been happening in Pennsylvania, you know, for decades is unconscionable to me. I believe it's immoral and it should never happen. And so the preponderance of your property tax goes in most municipalities and boroughs to the schools. The schools, of course, we've talked about a lot. Our public school system costs $30 billion a year, according to the NEA 2020 report. Now the cost is just shy of $20,000 per student. We had new data come out. Just shy of 20 grand per student. Now, you know, you could send a kid off to university with room and board for that kind of money. I mean, this is ridiculously expensive. And so I think we need several prongs of approaching this. And one, of course, is giving school choice. And the money should go to the students in some form of scholarships. And I see the Inquirer, you know.
I read it, yes.
Yeah. Mastriano is going to ruin our education
yes.
system.
He's anti-school, anti-teacher, anti-kid. He's anti-anti.
Yeah, as if the school systems are over 1.5 million kids have left the public school system this year. So what are they talking about, you know?
So go ahead, Senator. Continue. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they're nuts.
Yeah.
12th most expensive in the nation, you know, 28th quality student, and that's all pre-COVID numbers because of the heavy-handed Wolf administration rules, and the union's calling the shots there. We're probably in the 30s or 40s in student output here. We're not getting our bang for the buck. And so I believe in competition and that the people should have a choice where their kids go with the money going with the kids. And in that vein, I think I'll bring down administrative costs and then directly bring down property taxes.
I'm glad you said that because I had this discussion with a woman yesterday who said, I was told that he's anti-teacher. And I said, no, he's not anti-teacher. He's anti-overbloated administration that sucks all our money and doesn't give our kids the education that they need. I said, he's pro-teacher and he's pro-education. And she said, oh, well, I read that he's anti-teacher. I said, well, where'd you read that at? And, of course, the Philadelphia Inquirer. You know? And I said, well, I said, you have to consider the source. But I sent her to your website. But the point is that I think the point you're making, which is absolutely correct, is you're not anti-teacher, you're not anti-education, you're anti these administrators collecting these big fat checks and not doing anything that does anything for the kids.
Go ahead.
And these stupid little sound bites, you know, he's anti this or that. Really, come on, stop it. This is nonsense. And like any servicemen, we put our lives on the line here. We take it seriously, and we're always for the people. And obviously the status quo is not working, because the status quo, and Tom Wolf wants to throw another $1.3 billion on top of the $30 billion we're spending every year. And our kids aren't getting their value out of the school. So bring competition. That's caring. That's caring about the children. That's caring about the students. You know, what about Philadelphia? That's what I hear, you know, ad nauseum. And so let me tell you about Philadelphia. There's more people for school choice in Philadelphia than in Franklin County. 88% of the people in Philadelphia want to pick where their kids go to school, because yes, they're stuck with a zip code, with a broken school. It's not safe. They're wondering if their baby's going to come home alive the next day, you know, going off to school. And so let's do it. Let's give everyone an equal shot. This will make life easier and better for everybody across this nation, except, of course, for the school union.
Yes.
Well, you know, the school unions would love to continue to sit back and rake in those big monies and have 37 vice principals in a school.
Wait. I was told yesterday, a person called me, and she's so upset about the school. She says, I just found out that we have a teacher that's 101 years old is still getting 75% of her retirement fee. And I'm going, holy cripe. But look, something even more insidious, Senator, and I know this is very important to you, but the no left turn in education, they have a chapter president in Wisconsin who criticized the school district, and I won't pronounce the name because I'll do a worse job than when I pronounce Don's last name, but it's the OASD school district. And they actually gave her a cease and desist order because she was criticizing the obscene materials that they were purporting to teach the kids. And I am, and here you go. You've got, you know, our government telling our parents, they say, oh, parents need to get involved with their kids. And then when they get involved in with their kids, they're called terrorists. And it's just the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life.
And Senator, that is a great segue to go into one of the things that you're a proponent of. In fact, you've proposed a bill for parental rights here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, thank you. And it might run next week, which would be fantastic. So the Democrats want to distract us with nonsense. And they can't talk about the issues because their issues are failing. They're destroying our state. They're destroying people's lives and people's, you know, well-being. And so the idea that if you go to a school board meeting and express your views, that you're, you know, being labeled a domestic terrorist here, that's exactly what the Democrats want to do. They want to shut down free speech. They want to call the shots. They want to raise your kids in their image and not in the way that you prefer. And so this parental rights bill is designed to, you know, that we've gone so low that I had to do this, simply reaffirms a parent's right to raise their kids as they see fit.
Yeah, I think that all the Democrats have read Saul Alinsky's book. I think that's what this is all about, to be quite frank with you. But, of course, all the Democrats really are in areas where they have no cell phone reception, so they really don't know what the people are talking about.
Joanne, you've obviously have your daughter Naomi is in college, and your younger daughter Lily is still in school, so I'm sure you've become familiar with the indoctrination that they try to shove down your kids' throats.
Oh, absolutely. Lily would come home from school with her math problems, which are supposed to be about, you know, calculations, arithmetic, and, you know, and they would be scenarios about race, you know, like, you know, this colored, you know, whatever. It was like this person of this race had this issue, you know, and they would, like, word things in certain ways, you know, and it's like even in the math problems and in their reading, you know, for grammar, in their grammar classes, and they would be having stories that would, you know, sway them towards, you know, certain types of genderisms,
right,
and sexualities, and it's like it doesn't belong there. But
right,
I wanted to bring up what's going on in New York City, with what we just heard about, because since 2018, New York City has actually been funding drag queen story hours to kids in school. They spent $207,000 just in this alone. And the New York City mayor actually came out and said this is a love for diversity. And, you know, and they claim, he's claiming that, you know, since the there's this increased attack on, you know, the LGBTQ community, that they need to, you know, educate the children. And, you know, to me, that's like just wrong in so many ways. Using our tax dollars, first of all, for to fund this. But second of all, using our children to fix what he sees as an issue in our society. You know, just using our children is like something that's just been blowing my mind lately. You just see them doing it in so many ways. And, you know, so I'm really glad to see, you know, bills like this, Mastriano, you know, Senator Mastriano, you know, about parental rights, so we could actually have more of a say. And hopefully things like this do not come to Pennsylvania.
Right, right.
Governor Mastriano, they won't.
So. Well, I know you've already made the commitment that there will be no CRT and all that, things like that. But one of the things that, and this is important for people to realize, Senator, I think that bill number is SB 996. Is that still the same number? Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously, folks, call your state senators about that bill and get them behind that bill. And, you know, we want to make sure we get that in. So, Senator, one of the things you did during COVID is you had the fireside chats, which brought a lot of people hope and that, you know, we can move forward. And one of the things that you were able to bring out to people, which is why now people are more aware of what's going on in the schools and stuff like that, because when the schools were shut down, you know, parents got to get a bird's eye view of what was going on in the schools. And you were quick to bring that up in your fireside chats that, you know, parents needed to step up and speak up and stuff. And we've seen that happen with school board races and so forth. So, you know, I just wanted you to comment a little bit on how you saw that and why you felt it was important to start bringing that to people's attentions of what was going on.
You know, and as we start hearing, you know, about the things that parents are observing, you know, from the other room as their kids are behind a computer screen, you know, zooming into class. And it was appalling because they're talking about things that should not be talked about. I mean, in my day, that'd be child abuse. This would just be out of order. Probably get arrested and charged for some of the things that are being spread. And so instead of standing aside and complaining, so many people from across the state ran for school boards because they were going to, they became engaged then and find out that the school boards many times would not listen to the will of the parents, and they'd run off as if they were not held accountable to anybody. So we've had many school boards, of course, now occupied and by good conservatives who care about kids and who don't want to see their kids being exploited sexually or indoctrinated. And so that's how we do it. And this is just the beginning. We have to, you know, grow our presence, you know, throughout the state here, so we can ensure that we can preserve these safeties and protections for our kids.
These are just common sense people doing common sense things. And if that is if that's conservatism, then that's a good thing, because we should be doing more of what works and less of what doesn't work.
Well, I wanted to say this, though, Stan. See, when you're saying common sense things, now common sense things, or if you believe in the Constitution, you're an extremist.
Yeah, yes, that's right.
And so
that's right.
I just want you to understand, you know, because every time they describe Senator Mastriano in the paper, it's he's an extremist. He's an extremist.
Hitler.
So
well,
yeah,
I've got,
he's
I've
an lived, extremist.
Lived,
if,
listen,
so if
I've
you go to the, if you go to church, if you believe in the Constitution, if you believe in individual rights and freedoms, you know, if you believe that the parents should choose,
if you believe
what,
in America first, yeah, or yeah, the citizens yeah. first.
You're
yeah.
an extremist. So sign me up for the extremist policy, please.
Yeah. I think it's funny because I met somebody and we were debating about a topic, and someone in the background, well, they mentioned Mastriano, and someone in the background yelled, Hitler.
Oh, yeah, but
I'm like...
Yeah, but, you know, Senator, I'm almost done the ad, which I'm going to submit to your people. And we've put a face on, we put Josh's face on Emperor Nero with a royal laurel wreath and a violin, and we go through a whole litany of things that he fiddled on while Pennsylvania was burning. There's a picture of Pennsylvania burning in the background. But one of the things that I'd like to speak about is there's movement afoot finally to impeach Krasner in Philadelphia. I'd like you to update us on that. And I would just like to say, when they start talking about Senator Mastriano and that he's extreme or something like that, here's Josh Shapiro, who fiddled and rather go after the Little Sisters of the Poor for their beliefs rather than go after the criminals and cite the problems in our cities where crime is just everywhere, people are being pushed into subway cars, things of that nature.
Yep.
They talk about gun control, and yet when they did search and stop and frisk on known criminals that they knew these people were bad actors, Somehow that's a problem, whereas taking it away, the guns away from people who've never done anything, that's something that's all right to do. So these are the problems. So I'd like you to talk about the impeachment and the criminal justice system that we have in Pennsylvania and how you're going to make that change.
Well, you know, so remember what my opponent, who he is and what job he occupies, because he's a senior law enforcement official in the state now going on 7 years. And are you safer, Pennsylvania? Are you more secure? Are fentanyl that's going down? Are you feeling safe in Philadelphia and the other cities? Are you safe in the parking lot now in King of Prussia? If things are worse, that's exactly what Josh Shapiro is going to bring to us. And they are very worse. They're terrible. You know, Philadelphia is a very dangerous place in so many regards. And this is Democrat policies. These are the same people that want to distract us with nonsense while they want to defund the police. And, of course, they're protected by security and have guns around them. But they don't want you to have your own protection. They want to, you know, infringe on your constitutional rights. And so, you know, as far as what's going on with Krasner, the DA, really can't talk much about that because I'll be sitting, you know, sort of the jury when it comes to us. But
right,
it's right now in the judicial committee in the House underneath Rob Kaufman, Representative Rob Kaufman, my representative. And they'll have the hearings. They'll vote on impeachment. I believe that will happen, and then it will come to the Senate, of course, for adjudication. And so there needs to be consequences. You know, I believed all along that Tom Wolf should have been impeached early on during the COVID shutdown, and I believe that Levine should have been. So I don't know what prevented that from happening, but impeachment actions are originated out of the House.
That's because Josh Shapiro had his fiddle out, and he fiddled while our Rachel Levin took his mother out of nursing home, yeah. Put her in a hotel room while everybody else's mother and father died in nursing homes, and Josh Shapiro just fiddled away, never did anything. Josh, look, he wants to be president of the United States. He was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He's a very wealthy kid, very bright young, very bright individual, but he has no courage to stand up to the radical left in his party. And for all practical purposes, he represents the Democratic Party and its radical positions.
Yeah, he's too extreme for Pennsylvania. And the Democrats and, of course, the papers want to call people us who extol the values of our founding fathers as being extreme. That's nonsense. The extremism's on their side.
Well, the obvious thing is, the truth of the matter is that Josh and his party are completely out of touch with the needs of the everyday person of Pennsylvania. You know, the Democrats claim to be the party of the people, but they're not. They're the party of the elites. I mean, you know, it's funny how the tables have turned, so to speak. That now, you know, we are considered the party of the people, and the Democrats are obviously the party of the elites. You know, like Stan said, you know, Josh, as the top law enforcement official in Pennsylvania, has never seen the inside of a courtroom. And so, you know, again, it's a shame that it's come to this, but you're talking about real kitchen table issues, and they're talking about social engineering and inclusion and stuff like
women's
that.
Women's rights.
I mean, you know, one of the things that I also wanted to talk to you about, because I know it's near and dear to your heart, is school safety. And we've seen issues in schools skyrocket since we've had the COVID issue, which I don't think people really realize the understanding of, one, taking the kids out of school, shutting down the schools, which increased, you know, mental stress on kids and personality. But then when they went back to school, they were forced to wear masks. They couldn't interact with their peers. You know, so there's been a dehumanization of interaction between our children. And when you dehumanize people, there's no respect for life. And so, you know, I know you're taking steps right now to help increase security in our schools. Can we talk about that a little bit, please?
Yeah. I mean, it's so predictable. When a tragedy happens, the Democrats don't even have the respect or kindness to allow people to mourn. They come screaming out, advancing political positions and, you know, demanding people's innocent people who had nothing to do with these tragedies, stripping them of their rights. And so this needs to end. And, you know, Joe Biden, one of the policies that he supported 30 or 40 years ago, he's been in politics for a huge amount of time, was, of course, is this gun-free zone idea, which is a stupid feel-good Democrat idea, which all it does is make the schools a soft target.
Right.
So my recommendation is that you allow people who are trained, administrators or teachers who have additional training to be able to carry firearms in the school. Now, I do require additional training, and not just anyone who wants to, has a weapon go to school, because it's one thing when you're protecting yourself and your own house and your own person, but when you're bringing it to a facility like a school, you got to know exactly how to operate that weapon. And it's one thing, when you're on a range shooting at a target, but when you're in a crisis situation there, you got to be able to handle it. And so it's a simple matter. I think we'll start with veterans and the law enforcement that are in the schools, the teaching or administrators, and then bring in some additional training for other teachers that wish to carry. If a teacher doesn't want to carry, they don't have to. But imagine this. Imagine Texas when they were under siege for an hour and the police, for some ridiculous reason, did not make any moves because they were afraid they might get shot. I mean, guys, really? For an hour, teachers are locked in their rooms wondering if that lunatic was going to come break their door down and kill everybody in the classroom. That teacher could then defend the students in that classroom here and resolve the issue immediately instead of waiting for police that might not come.
I suggest that there was an interesting story about, and I can't recall exactly where I saw it, about the Israelis and how they've hardened their schools because of the terrorist attacks that were occurring in their schools over the years, and they have not had any injuries or anything in the schools because of what they've done. I would highly recommend that we take a look at what they've done and maybe bring some of their experts in, because they have hardened the schools tremendously. Something else that I know is close and dear to your heart is the fact that Josh Shapiro was fiddled while all our borders are collapsing, that they're bringing in thousands of illegal aliens to our state. These people are untested for COVID, unlike us. They come with diseases. But what's even more important is the gangs and the drug dealers and the insidious drugs that are permeating our school system because of this. And he has fiddled that away completely. And I'd like to know how you would like to address that particular problem itself.
Well, as I said before on this program, every state now is a border state, because the problems aren't just in Texas and Arizona and New Mexico, that they've permeated California too. They permeate the entire nation. And we're suffering the effects of these failed policies from Joe Biden, who's rather defend a faraway border between Ukraine and Russia with $40 billion. And they whined and cried and pruned when there was a $5 billion budget to safeguard our own southwestern border. I'm appalled at the neglect and the lack of care for people in this state and this nation. And when we have governors like Wolf and Shapiro, and he's not going to be your governor, but they look the other way, when you have literally plane loads of illegals being dropped off, in Lehigh Valley and Harrisburg and Scranton, and we don't know who these people are. One of the plane loads had 120 passengers, and 113 of which were minors. What's happening with those kids? Who's going to take care of them? And we got no answers. Our attorney general has failed, because in the position as being the most senior law enforcement official in the state, he should have clamped down and taken on the Wolf administration. But he's a loyal boy of his party. He's a loyal member of the Democrat Party. It's Democrat Party above everything else. He doesn't care about us, because and why do I say that? Here's the fact of the matter: we have a plague because of this open border hitting our streets here. We have got 4,000 dead last year from fentanyl. I mean, this is a plague, and that's streaming across the border, coming to Pennsylvania and killing, beautiful people. And this needs to stop. And so, what are we going to do about it? So, I'm contemplating deploying elements of our 28th Division, in fact, down to the border if any of those governors want assistance in shoring up the border, until we get a president that actually cares about our nation.
The other thing that, and I tell you what, I'm excited about you becoming governor. People should be really enrolled in this, people in Philadelphia, and I know you're going to be meeting with many of the people in Philadelphia, and Philadelphia is not going to be an easy target for the Democratic machine, which is really completely lost touch with its people and is definitely out of cell phone service. The other thing that I know you worked diligently on, and give us an update, and that is protecting women's sports. Josh Shapiro has fiddled away as usual and permitting transgender males to participate and dress in women's sports and locker rooms. It's just absolutely unbelievable to me that this is occurring.
You know, for 2 years, we're lecturing Democrats with their COVID policies to follow the science. Well, let's just do that, and let's follow real science, observable science, and that every cell in an individual's body with the chromosomes will tell you whether an individual was, you know, is male or female. It's as simple as that. And if you go stand in a garage, it doesn't make you a car. This is just
Oh, you can. Oh, you
that's
can,
great.
Wait a minute.
I like that one.
I am stealing that one.
Yeah, well, wait, I'm first. I'm holy. You got to do this show more often.
Oh, that is brilliant. Wait a minute. That'd
be, well, if you're a Democrat, you might be an Edsel.
Oh my God. Oh. Yeah, that's a good one too. Hey, Don, this is a great show. Oh. I love the comedy. We do comedy for like 2 hours here on this show.
That was one of them. That was one of them extreme jokes.
I love that. I'm actually so writing extreme, that down now.
He's going to race me to share it on social media.
I know, like me, you probably thought of that about 3 o'clock in the morning when you couldn't sleep.
Oh, that's great. Oh man, that's fantastic. Well, go ahead and finish your thought. As I try to compose myself here.
Tears.
Look, so women have only been able to vote for 102 years. I mean, this has been a long, hard road for ladies, and they've only had really, you know, equal playing field with opportunities in sports in the recent years, really since Title IX back 50 years ago. And they finally have arrived. What I mean is that they have scholarships and opportunities and competitions, you know, around the world that are on par with opportunities that men have in many regards. And now, what happened to the feminists? We're going to allow biological males to come in and dominate and co-opt and take over female sports. You know, Thomas ranked 467th for men in swimming. He decides to go play on the girls' team and is now number one, setting world records. You know, Joyner was one of the fastest people in the world. She set records, but there's actually male high school runners that are faster than her. There's huge differences. So let's follow the science. Look, guys, you need to stay in guys' sports. I don't care how long or how short your hair is. It doesn't matter. If you're a man, you stay with the men. It's as simple as that.
Oh, and the thing is, what people don't realize is when you allow this to happen, a lot of our young women have been competing to get scholarships and so forth and so on. And now when you let this happen with the transgender, and again, we're not discriminating against anybody. If transgender athletes want to compete, then they should create a transgender category for them to compete in. You know, in other words, equal playing field. We talk about this all the time in this country. Everybody wants equality, equal playing field. Well, then let's keep it as an equal playing field. I mean, this to me is mind-boggling how they don't. This is the hypocrisy of the left on everything. Okay, they're pro-choice. They support abortion. Yet, if a pregnant mother gets killed, they charge that person with a double homicide. Okay. They, as Stan said earlier, they want to do away with your due process rights and use red flag laws to take your guns. That's okay. But when you have stop and frisk, which worked in New York City, that's against your rights. You know, so again, they contradict themselves in their own policies. You know, it's the whole thing is just mind boggling to me.
It's really hard to see how low we've gone in this nation of ours here. And so we need strong, determined leaders. And so on day one, I'm signing an executive order that bars biological males from competing in female sports. On day one, that happens. And now, look, so I'm going to move rapidly. I have probably about 10 or 20 executive orders in mind. And I will work with the legislative body to sign into law, to codify these into law, so that after I'm done 8 years being governor, they're not going to be overturned by anybody.
Yeah, I think that's important to make sure they get codified once they're done. And that is the strongest way, because that really makes it a law. I always hated executive orders from the standpoint that it's kind of like being the king. But in this particular situation, we need to do these things and then get them codified completely. One of the things that I did want to mention, and this is always a tense subject for a lot of people because it runs the gamut, but as someone who myself is pro-life, what I resent is Josh Shapiro forcing through his action and his statements and the law forcing me to pay for abortions. Yeah. And I think that's wrong, completely wrong. I'm not going to judge people. I'm not God. But when it comes to life and it comes to that, I don't believe the state should be involved in having people who really in their faith don't believe in this, forcing them to pay for something like this activity. And it's very upsetting to me that he has done that. And he's fiddled while people died, basically.
Yeah, and that their stances on abortion are very extreme. You know, they both him and Fetterman both want to allow abortion up until birth, even through
and
the
canal. And they call us radical.
Yeah, and even if the baby's born from abortion, they want to be able to withhold medical treatment from that baby. I mean, they talk about extreme. We're extreme. I mean, you can't get more extreme.
You know, I think it was Epoch Times. There was an article recently about a woman who's 52 years old, and she told her story how she survived several attempts by her mother to abort her back then. And here's this beautiful woman who has a tremendous business and so articulate and well-spoken. And I think, as Ronald Reagan said, isn't it interesting that all the people who are for abortion have been born already?
Right.
And I think that's the real thought we got to think about.
So, Senator, obviously, you yourself are believe that life begins at conception and stuff like that. But you've been tackling this issue for many years since you've gotten to the Senate in 2019. You have not been afraid to speak about this because I think it's an issue that I think is important to many, not only Pennsylvanians, but people in the country in general. So, let's talk about that and what your plans are as far as this particular issue.
And I believe it's the most important issue in our lifetime. Mm-hmm. We'll see what the Supreme Court does. You know, apparently the decision by Alito that was leaked, nefariously leaked, never happened before, I guess, was that sour people, the Supreme Court justice's decision here to return the power and decision on how to handle the issue of life back to the states, where it should have been in the first place if this issue was going to exist in the first place. And so, you know, I have strong views on the right to life. Here's the deal, though. On this issue here, I cannot act unilaterally. I need legislation out of the House and Senate. And so some of the bills that I anticipate coming to my desk as your governor, of course, hopefully will be the heartbeat bill. And we'll see Representative Stephanie Borowitz's version of that one come out. It's mirror legislation that I have in the Senate. And signing that in the law, which uses a scientific-based approach to protect life. And the idea is when you flatline, no longer have a heartbeat, you're declared dead. So therefore, if you hear a heartbeat, there's life. And so the idea behind a heartbeat bill is scientifically taking the emotion out of it here and saying, okay, if you hear it, when you hear a baby's heartbeat, that heartbeat needs to be protected because that's a life behind it.
So let's dive into that, because one time on this program we had somebody call up and give you a hard time. Now, so obviously you like
that's not the first time.
Yeah, well, I know that. But anyway,
he handles that well.
Like myself, you believe that life begins at conception. However, if the heartbeat bill was in place, and we've talked about this, I think it was 1984, there was almost an agreement in the U.S. Congress and Senate, and the all or nothing folks shot it down. How many children have been killed since then? But how many would have been saved if that legislation would have been passed? I know we've talked about this, but I think it's important information to pass to people.
Yeah, you know, as far as, you know, that one purist, and the guy has pure intentions, but he just can't think strategically. And I get it. I get it. You believe passionately in life.
Right.
I understand that perspective. But we got to stop eating our own on this whole topic here. It just gets ridiculous. You know, we stand on the same side of the issue, so let's work together. Because imagine if you take that argument to, you know, and I hate to do it, bring us back to World War II. With that argument, if you can't, you know, completely end abortion, then don't do any legislation is facetious. And, you know, we talked about that. I remember Chris Smith and Henry Hyde on the floor of Congress, and they had Democrat support, and it looked like we're going to have legislation to protect life. And the Democrats, you know, always outfoxing the Republicans. The Republicans were all or nothing, just like that phone call from that one young man. If you can't get it all, you get nothing. And so the Democrats came out and said, we want exceptions. And the Republicans were like, oh, no, we want to protect all life. And as a result, that failed. And because of that, now we have 64 million aborted babies on our hands in America alone. Much of that, or many of them, paid for by taxpayer dollars. This is unconscionable. And so if you, Schindler could not save all 6 million Jews during World War II, but he saved several hundred. So with the argument we're hearing, so, you know, if you can't save them all, don't save any, is just ridiculous here. And a heartbeat bill would save a magnificently large amount of babies.
Well, I think the number, if I remember it correctly, if that legislation would have passed, of those 64 million, I think 57 million of them would have been alive today. I think that was the number. I'd have to go back in my notes. But it was something like that. It was a humongous amount. And again, you know, I know how you feel in your heart, just like I feel in my heart, that life begins at conception. But if we can save some, you know, then let's do that and work towards the end goal.
Yes. But, and know, that's what our friends should have done in D.C. back in 85, and they didn't.
One of the things I'd like to say is that you are a man of your word. You believe what you believe. You're not afraid to stand for that, and you don't back down, which, by the way, would be a great name for a radio show. But I really acknowledge
the shameless plug.
I really acknowledge
up
you.
Up in 10 minutes.
Yes, I really acknowledge you for that courage, because that's one of the things that there are some Republicans and some other people, they constantly back down at the end, and they snatch defeat out of victory. And I acknowledge you for that. When you become governor, we're going to have a real person there who has the courage to say, wait a minute, let's think about this, and let's think about it strategically. Let's think about how it benefits the citizens of Pennsylvania, the citizens of your county, the citizens of the United States. And that's what you're all about, because you put your life on the line for this country, and I believe you'll put your life on the line for all of us. So I am excited about you being governor, I will tell you.
Thank you.
Well, one of the things I say to people, Senator, when they ask me for a simple thing about you, and I said I could sum it up in a couple words. You know, Senator Mastriano is people over politics. That's how I sum it up. I said you would hurt yourself politically to help somebody, a person. You don't worry about the political consequences. It's about the people. And that is something that we've been sorely missing in the political landscape in this country for a long time. Somebody like you, somebody like Donald Trump, somebody like Ronald Reagan, who you understand politics, but you don't let the politics make your decision. You do what's best for the people.
You will be a choice, not an echo.
Yes.
Well, thank you, guys.
So, Senator, before we have to sign off, is there anything coming up that we got going on in the campaign? I know, in fact, today we've got a 24-hour of giving going on, where if people can, if you want to give that number where people can text, and you're doing a dollar-for-dollar match, I think somebody is matching what they're contributing for us.
Yes, we have a matching grant. I don't know, matching contribution, trying to think of the right word.
Right.
And so we have a 24-hour fund drive going on right now. We're about 6 hours or so, into, I guess 5 hours into it. Our goal is $100,000. It takes money to run a campaign, and we're going to need millions when this is all said and done.
Right.
But you can go to dougforgov.com, doug4gov.com, to donate there. There's a link. Or you can text Doug24 to 888. 444-8774 and give that way as well.
Right. And again, one of the things that has been fantastic, and you know, it's funny, I talk to people about this all the time, is that your campaign is basically grassroots. And what I mean by that is it's the people. It's the people that have pushed you over the top. 29,000 signatures in the petitions. And of course, the establishment refused to see that.
Half a million votes almost in the primary.
Half a million votes in the primary. You more than doubled your closest opponent. You know, they spent millions of dollars against you. And it's funny, I was talking to one of your former opponents yesterday, Charlie Giroux, and he said, you know, the funny thing was that they were throwing all this money at Bill McSwain, and it actually increased Doug's popularity. and it's, but think about this. If they would have just taken that money and and looked at the writing on the wall with the amount of signatures you got in the primary, that is money that could have been spent to help defeat Josh Shapiro.
Yes.
And so this is the weakness.
But it's a process that we've got to go through. And Doug, I don't think you would have won it any other way, because you relish in the competition, because it allowed people to see you stand up against something else and anything that's thrown at you, because that's what's going to happen in the fall. So I'm never afraid of the competition. I want more people involved. I want everybody involved. But at the end of the day, we have to recognize that the real threat to this country is a progressive Democratic Party leftism, which really exists in all the South America countries, and that's why all those people are coming up here to come to this country, and we don't want to be Venezuela.
Well, my whole point here, though, is really what I'm saying is that, you know, that money could have been used to support Doug and defeat Josh Shapiro. And I'm waiting for them to throw that money at Doug now that they were throwing against him.
Well, some of those people would have probably given the money to Josh. Now they don't have it, so I'm happy for that.
Well, I didn't want to say that on the air, but, you know.
Yeah, but I have no problem saying it.
Well, Senator, thank you very much for coming on. Enjoy Father's Day on Sunday.
I must say, you must have fun listening to being. It's like we're sitting at the kitchen table just having fun, you know?
Yes.
I love it.
Well, just remember, just because you're standing in a car in the garage, you're not a car.
That was the line of the day. Yeah.
Yes. God, you beat me out today.
Oh, sorry, Stan.
All right, Senator. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you next week. All right, take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So, Happy Father's Day.
So before we sign off, because I know we only got a couple of minutes left, I want to first of all say Happy Father's Day to Stan.
Happy Father's Day to Don.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, the only way I get my kids to acknowledge me is, especially my grandkids, I've told them, as long as when somebody asks you who made you cute, they have to say my pop-up Stan. And then I said, if you say that until you're 16 years old, I will buy you a car.
Oh, okay.
So I get that card, pop-up, you made me cute. I get that all the time.
If all I got to do is write a card, I'll write you a card.
And that's it. Now,
I had a pop-up like that.
I didn't tell them what kind of car.
All right, well, hang on, everybody, for the Don't Back Down show coming up next, where I'm sure you'll hear some more jokes from Stan Cassaggio. Thank you for listening to The Conservative Voice, and happy Father's Day, everybody. See you next week.
Have a great weekend.